Well, hello, good evening, and thank you for that introduction, Mahtapriya. So I'm going to start this evening by exploring the idea of freedom. What is it? And then I'm going to go on to see how it can be developed using ethics, meditation, and wisdom. So to start, let's imagine someone in prison who is then released. They'd feel free, wouldn't they? There'd be so much then that they could do that they hadn't been able to do when they were in prison. So that's one idea of freedom. But maybe they have a family and they need to work to support them. Maybe they have a job that they do, but they don't enjoy it, but they feel they need to do it. So they may feel bound to be doing a job and living in a particular place. So they may not still feel completely free. But suppose now this person wins the lottery and they had plenty of money, so they didn't have to work anymore and they could live where they liked. They'd have lots of freedoms then. But would they be able to act without hindrance or restraint? So when they see something they like, would they go after it unthinkingly? Would their actions be constrained by what their friends and family are thinking? Will they feel free of fear of losing what they have? Will they be free from outbursts of anger when something goes wrong? These latter are spiritual freedoms. They're different from liberties. And liberties are what we can often think of as being freedom in our society. This idea is put very well by Dostoevsky. He said, by interpreting freedom as the propagation and immediate gratification of needs, people distort their own nature, for they engender in themselves a multitude of pointless and foolish desires, habits, and incongruous stratagems. Their lives are motivated only by mutual envy, sensuality, and ostentation. A bit hard, perhaps, but perhaps you can recognise it. So this story illustrates a kind of hierarchy of freedoms. First, there was the physical constraint of the prison. And there may also be other physical things from which we're not free. I mean, like hunger, thirst, extremes of temperature. But mostly in this country, we're free of such constraints. So we're free to focus on other freedoms. Then there are the social constraints, such as the duty to care for children or for parents. But being free to do what we like may still leave us bound to the whims of our minds. So there's the difference between freedom as license and freedom as spiritual autonomy. And the Buddha emphasized the importance of freedom as spiritual autonomy. As Mahtapriya said, he talked about how the ocean has just one taste, the taste of salt, and his teachings have just one taste, the taste of freedom. And we shall be exploring that taste via a twofold classification. So there's freedom of the heart and mind, which is freedom from subjective, emotional, and psychological biases. And there's freedom through wisdom, freedom from wrong views, ignorance, all opinions. And that, when it's taken to its utmost, is complete enlightenment. Now, I'm going to be rather like the Buddha. I'm not going to talk much about enlightenment, but I am going to talk about how to become freer. So the talk's going to be more about liberating mind rather than liberated mind. So we've looked, now let's go on to explore how we can develop this more liberating mind, liberate our minds. And we're going to do that in terms of ethics, meditation, and wisdom. which is a sort of kind of threefold path to enlightenment. Well, first let's look at what these three steps consist of. Ethics can be summarised as actions have consequences. It's based on the principle that how we act influences what we become. So kind acts will make us into a kind person. What matters in how we act is our state of mind or intention. So a generous act done to make someone else happy is more beneficial than one that aims to make somebody like us. Of course, in reality, usually there's quite a mixture of motives. So our practice of ethics usually isn't just black and white. And the Buddha gave us five guidelines, which all Buddhists follow. And these five guidelines about how we can act more ethically are, first of all, not doing harm, which we can think of in a positive way as being kind. Secondly, not taking what is not given, or more positively, is being generous. Avoiding sexual conduct which harms anyone else, which we can think of positively as cultivating contentment. Fourthly, not saying anything untrue. And fifthly, abstaining from drink and drugs which affect the mind, which we can think of positively as cultivating mindfulness. So that's a little summary of ethics, and we shall come back to it and look at how it can help us move towards being freer. So now let's move on to meditation. So meditation is the most direct way of working on the mind. There are many different meditations, and the most basic ones, which are the ones we teach to people when they first come here, are mindfulness of breathing and developing loving kindness. But because they're the most basic ones, we shouldn't underestimate them. The Buddha was fundamentally doing the mindfulness of breathing on the night he was enlightened. And he also said that developing loving kindness is very powerful and can lead to enlightenment. Mindfulness of breathing helps to develop focus and attention. And developing loving kindness helps to develop more positive states of mind. And both can have profound effects when done regularly. Ethics and meditation support each other. When we're more ethical, then the mind is calmer and meditation is easier. And through meditation, we can become more sensitive to what is happening in the mind and become more ethical. So now I've outlined what ethics and meditation are about, so now it remains for me to talk a little bit about wisdom. Wisdom involves seeing things as they really are. That doesn't mean understanding general relativity and quantum theory. It's much more about how our minds work and about how everything about us and about others is impermanent. Our bodies keep changing, which becomes increasingly apparent as we become older. Our moods and emotions change, and the thoughts going through our minds can sometimes seem like a torrent. And from an appreciation of all this change comes a more fluid view of the self as something that changes. And because it's something that changes, it's also something that we can influence. That we can influence through ethics and meditation. We can be more rigid in our views of ourselves than we imagine. So I remember a time when I was talking to a friend about my fears of growing old and not being able to do the things that I enjoy doing. And he said that once I reach that stage, I might not want to do the things I currently enjoy doing. And I could recognise the truth in that. So, for example, when I was young, I enjoyed doing mathematics, but it's not something which I enjoy doing now. So I'd assumed that my preferences would stay the same. So I've outlined what ethics, meditation, and wisdom are. So let me go on now to talk about how they can help us to become more liberated. Now, ethics may feel like a discipline, and so not very freeing. It feels as if we're being more constrained, perhaps. But the effects can be quite surprising. So I was quite struck by the story of a monk who was teaching meditation in a high-security prison. He normally lived in a monastery and followed many more precepts than the ones I've told you about. And at the end of one session, the inmates asked him about his life, and he said that he'd get up every morning at 4 o'clock. There were no heaters in the monastery, so it was very cold. He ate only one meal a day. There was no sex, no alcohol, no TV, no radio, no music, no movies, and no playing of sports. They talked little in the monastery, worked hard, spent their free time sitting cross-legged watching the breath, and they slept on the floor. And the inmates were stunned by this austerity. And one prisoner was so moved, he said, "That's terrible living in your monastery. Why don't you come here and live with us?" Yet the truth was that people were happy living in the monastery. They wanted to stay there. The austerity helped them to live a simple life that they enjoyed. They weren't living that way because they thought there'd be some future rewards. It was because they appreciated living that way. I appreciate this just in a small way when I remember my ordination retreat, which was in India. And life there was much simpler than I'm used to here. Although there were by no means as many privations as in that monastery. We were looked after really quite well. But despite the hard beds and other sort of small privations, I felt blissfully happy. Much more so than in my actually more comfortable life here. So real freedom is freedom from desire, not freedom of desire. And that freedom from desire can bring great contentment. The self-imposed constraints help the monks to feel freer from their desires. And I think it's quite interesting about how constraints can make us feel freer. I came across a comment by Stravinsky, where he says, "My freedom will be so much the greater and more meaningful the more narrowly I limit my field of action and the more I surround myself with obstacles. Whatever diminishes constraint diminishes strength. The more constraints one imposes, the more one frees oneself of the chains that shackle the spirit." However, I'm not really recommending to you that you go and live in a monastery like that. We can benefit from ethics even without such deprivations. The Buddha talks about how each of these five precepts of not doing harm, not taking what's given, not hurting through sexual acts, not saying what's untrue, and not taking drink and drugs, each of these gives us freedom from danger, freedom from animosity, and freedom from oppression to limitless numbers of beings. And in giving these freedoms, one gains a share in the limitless freedom from danger, the freedom from animosity, and freedom from oppression that all beings are enjoying. Now, I think actually it's sometimes easier to see the opposite of this. So you can see on the news quite often how revenge for a violent act can bring about even more violence. and so increase conflicts around the world. But the Buddha also talked about the value of ethics on a personal level. And he said, when you act well, there's no need to think, may I become free from remorse. This is simply in accordance with nature. For one who acts well, freedom from remorse arises. And when you're free from remorse, there's no need to think, may joy arise in me. Again, it accords with nature. In one who is free from remorse, joy arises. And when you're joyous, there's no need to think, may rapture arise in me. It's completely natural. For one who is joyous, rapture arises. And so on. He goes through stage after stage until finally one becomes liberated and enlightened. And if only it were that easy. So let me move now to meditation. We may think that we're free from stress when lounging around watching the TV. Yet when we stop, what's the state of our minds? TV can provide a temporary distraction, but it doesn't actually eliminate the stress. Meditation is a direct way of working on the mind and becoming freer much deeper down. Buddhists have known about the many benefits of meditation for some time, and now scientists are investigating and finding many benefits. For example, it gives people a gain in mental resources, becoming better able to attend mindfully to the present and to savour upcoming pleasant events. It provides a gain in psychological resources, becoming more accepting of ourselves and seeing our lives as being more purposeful. It provides a gain in social resources, forging deeper and more trusting relationships and feeling more support from close others. And it provides a gain in physical resources, becoming healthier and having a stronger immune system. So meditation helps to bring freedom from stress, anxiety, low self-esteem, loneliness, and ill health. Quite impressive, really. Meditation involves watching the mind. And strangely, it can be freeing to see how habitual the mind is. It's beautifully described in the following poem. It's called Autobiography in Five Chapters by Portia Nelson. So one, I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I'm lost. I'm hopeless. It isn't my fault. It takes forever to find a way out. Two, I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place. But it isn't my fault. It still takes a long time to get out. Three, I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it's there. I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I am. It is my fault. I get out immediately. Four, I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Five. I walk down another street. And I rather like that. It sort of shows how the power of seeing what happens, seeing our habits, and by seeing our habits, we can free ourselves from them. We need to recognise what's there. It reminds me of a time recently when something upset me and my mind raced around trying to find someone to blame and ideally someone else rather than me and to make them put it right. And I noticed what was happening. And I couldn't stop the racing mind by will. But I could empathise with myself and see it as a normal human response and practice developing loving kindness for myself. I could explore what it was like in the body and emotions rather than using the brain to try to make it right. So using mindfulness meditation. And eventually, I could see that the racing mind was a construction by me and that it was what was giving me pain much more than the original stimulus. And then I could see what I was doing, and none of it bothered me very much at all, neither the original stimulus nor my reaction. I could just be a bit more amused by it. Now, this process isn't easy. It requires looking at areas that we'd rather ignore. And people in the West can give themselves a hard time for not being perfect. But it's freeing to recognise common human vulnerabilities so that we know we're not unique. The spiritual teacher Ram Dass said, "Through all the years of my practice, from psychotherapy, from psychedelics, from meditation and yoga, I have never gotten rid of a single neurosis. They're all still there, but they've gone from being huge, scary monsters to delightful little schmoos. I see one coming along and I say, 'Oh, there you are again. I remember you. Tricky little thing, aren't you?'" Rather nice, isn't it? I mean, in some ways, rather sad. I think when I first came along to the Buddhist Centre, I imagined that I would manage to stop feeling any strong emotions. And I think I've realised over the years that that's not the way it is. It's much more that I know a different way to relate to them. So, we've explored ethics and meditation, and now let's come to wisdom. We can't become freer unless we realise how we're not free. We're bound by self-made rules we don't realise exist. For example, needing to impress people in order to be happy. One way of thinking about it is that we're blown about by worldly winds, 8 worldly winds. The first two are gain and loss. So we want gain and we don't want loss. And that gain and loss can apply to possessions, people, a role, health, lots of things. I think one thing I've found useful sometimes is realising that losing something can give new freedoms. So when the children left home, I missed them, but actually I could go out more. I was freer to do what I wanted to do. The second two worldly winds are fame and infamy. So we want to be admired and popular, and we don't want infamy. This is a basic human trait. And it's interesting for me to be observing how I can be wanting admiration for giving this talk. And then when that happens, I can feel sort of quite tight and constrained. And then, you know, there are times when I'm just simply enjoying exploring the topic and I can feel more open and spacious. And actually, of course, there's both. And the practice is to be content with being anxious and even perhaps to see that being anxious can be helpful. The next two worldly winds are praise and blame. Now, the pointlessness of being blown about by this winds of praise and blame came home to me very strongly while I was still working at Cambridge University Press. And I was having an annual review with my manager. And my manager praised me a lot for one of the projects I was looking after. And that project was running very smoothly, and I had done almost no work on it because it had been running so smoothly. And then he was quite critical of a different project, a project which I'd taken on relatively recently. I put a lot of effort into, and actually I felt that I'd managed to organise it very well, but it was still in a bit of difficulty. And I realised that this praise and blame really didn't mean a thing to me, because I could see where I felt I had done well and where, really, I hadn't done much at all. So now we come to pleasure and pain. We can strive not to experience pain, but this is impossible. And the relief when we realise this is impossible can be quite great. No one has a life free of pain. Pain is part of the human condition. In fact, it's been a bit of an insight for me recently to realise that I can want contradictory things. So, for example, I want it to be warm and sunny, but I don't want it to be too hot. Or I want to see a sparrowhawk in my garden, but I don't want it to catch any birds. Now, these worldly winds arise from seeing ourselves as individuals separate from the rest of humanity. They're natural, but we can take them less seriously. So what can we do about them? Well, the first thing we can do is simply notice that they're there. Simply notice when we're wanting to have gain, fame, praise, or pleasure. And then we can practice acceptance with whatever's there. The value of acceptance is illustrated by a lovely story from the time when the British were in India. And the British apparently made a golf course near Calcutta so they could continue to play golf. And the problem was that there were monkeys, and the monkeys enjoy playing with the golf balls. So, first of all, the British made a fence all round the golf course. But, of course, monkeys can climb over fences. So next, they try to distract the monkeys and give them something else that they'd enjoy playing with. But the monkeys enjoyed the golf balls best of all. So then they tried capturing the monkeys and taking them away. But every time they removed a monkey, another monkey came along. So eventually, they did the only thing they could do. They changed the rules of the game. And the new rule was, you played the ball wherever the monkey dropped it. And I think it's like that for us, isn't it? We have to play from wherever our minds have dropped us. Now, we can practice in ways which help us not to cling to gain, fame, praise and pleasure. And here are a few ideas. I'm sure there are other ways as well. We can practice generosity to overcome feelings of wanting to gain. We can practice integrity and honesty to overcome the desire for popularity. We can appreciate our own efforts and those of others to overcome the desire for praise, just as I appreciated my own efforts at work so that the comments of my manager didn't matter so much. And we can cultivate contentment to diminish the desire for pleasure. Contentment doesn't come from objects, but from our own state of mind. So I told you about my ordination retreat in India. Well, there, I couldn't have my normal coffee for breakfast. I just drank water the whole time. But I didn't miss the coffee. I was very happy and contented with what was there. When I came back to England, I wanted coffee. So we can enjoy what is pleasant and accept what is unpleasant. So you might go for a walk on a sunny summer's day and then may start to feel hot. And when you're feeling hot, it can be helpful to know that that's what's happening and to take off some clothes and perhaps to go and sit in the shade sometimes. But also, you may have to accept that being hot is part of the experience. And it's not very helpful to be dreaming of a cold shower or to be grumbling all the time, rather than just appreciating what's there, perhaps some beautiful flowers or birdsong. If you want to walk, if you want the walk just to give you pleasant experiences, you're going to be disappointed. If you can allow both pleasant and unpleasant experiences to be there in your experience, then it's possible to relax. So we started to explore a little of what freedom through wisdom might mean. And I thought you might like to just have a little taste in your own experience. So perhaps recollect how it feels when you've given someone something they appreciate, even if it's just a cup of tea. So you've been free from grasping to hold on to your things, money or time. How did that feel? Recollect how it feels when you know that you've acted on your values and perhaps popularity has felt a little less important. How does that feel? Recollect how it feels when you've appreciated your own efforts and the opinion of others has mattered a little less. How did that feel? And perhaps you can recollect times when you've been able to hold what is unpleasant as simply part of your experience without the burden of having to fix it. How did that feel? The Buddha compares the freedom that comes from a mind dominated by generosity, love and wisdom, rather than greed, hatred and delusion, to being relieved from debt, being liberated from slavery, being released from prison, and recovering from a physical illness. By practicing ethics, meditation and wisdom, those freedoms are available to us all, at least to some extent. And I'd like to finish by reading a poem by Mitakali. She was a woman who lived at the time of the Buddha and was one of his followers. Although I left home for no home and wandered full of faith, I was still greedy for possessions and praise. I lost my way. My passions used me, and I forgot the real point of my wandering life. Then, as I sat in my little cell, there was only terror. I thought, this is the wrong way. A fever of longing controls me. Life is short. Age and sickness gnaw away. I have no time for carelessness before this body breaks. And as I watched the elements of mind and body rise and fall away, I saw them as they really are. I stood up. My mind was completely free. The Buddha's teaching had been done. Thank you.